Hi, Christina Caro. Call this meeting to order at 12:02 p.m. and the first item on our agenda is roll call.
Ashmita Ola-Williams. Here. Arzali Barragan.
Here.
Tyler Luravano.
Here.
Ashley Medioris.
Here.
Christina Caro.
Here.
Nolan Kalara.
Here.
Jillian Mangapas.
Here.
Alea Largo.
Here.
Michelle Cerrados.
Here.
Kila Popal. Not here. James Traer. Not here. Josephine Cabeza.
Here.
Carlos Aguilera.
Here.
Martin Castillo. Not here. James Carroll.
Here.
Mylan Quinn. Not here. Steve Spencer.
Present.
Crystal Tonga.
Here.
And Sarah Nelson. Not here.
And next we have action item approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I, Ashley Medeiros, motion to approve the agenda.
And then I second. I, Arzali, second.
Motion by Ashley, seconded by Arzali. Is there anyone opposed to this motion? Seeing that there are none, the agenda has been approved by unanimous consent. Next, we have action item approval of the minutes of August 24, 2022.
I, Ashley Medeiros, with motion to approve the minutes.
I, Nolan Kalara, second.
Okay, motion by Ashley, seconded by Nolan. Is there anyone opposed to this motion? Seeing that there are none, the minutes have been approved by unanimous consent. Next, the chair would like to recognize Mylan at 12:04. How do you pronounce your last name, Mylan?
Quinn.
Quinn. Okay. At 12:04 p.m. Next, we have public comment. Public comment is intended as a time for any member of the public to address the committee on any issues affecting ASI and/or the California State University East Bay. Seeing that there are members of the public, would anyone like to make a public comment? Okay, we can go ahead and move on to unfinished items. Seeing that there are none, we have new business items. And first up, we have discussion item A, Pioneer Insights. The Board of Directors will discuss student diversity and retention data from Pioneer Insights. And are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, sure. Perfect.
So
yes. Do you have, we have the HDMI right here.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. I'm Danny.
Hello.
I'd like to set up, we'll start chit-chatting. So, my name is Annie Young. I'm the Associate Vice President of Institutional Effectiveness and Research. So it's pretty much the data office for the institution. So we collect and manage student information. So all your courses that you're taking, the grade, when you started. Is that cool? Is this cool part? Okay. How many folks kind of stay with the institution, and kind of going forward. So I thought I'd just start up as I set up. What kind of questions do you have about student data and student information, dying questions you might have, or just curious about, and I'll help kind of help frame how I talk about all the data that we have on campus. Go for it. Sorry, I can't see everyone's name, but can you just tell me your name is?
Oh, yeah. I'm Nolan, by the way,
Director
of Programming. I just wanted to ask, like, how much data involving diversity is in your work?
Ah, what are you interested in terms of diversity?
Like, what types of people, like, are necessarily major or a certain program?
Okay, so you're just in terms of major diversity.
Yeah.
There's also race diversity. There is by sex. There is by low income status, so it's a proxy. So we don't actually know specific family income. Whatever you report to us is very, very protected. So we just have the estimates that you have put in on your admissions form, for example, and we use that as a proxy for low income status. First generation status we have as well, and we define that as first in your family to obtain a degree. So there's a couple of definitions out there floating around the world, but that's what we do have. Yeah, anyone else? Please just jump in.
So my question was more on like the progress of GI 2025.
Oh.
Especially just because when that was put out in 2015, I believe, 2016,
yeah.
the planned was, well, the pandemic kind of came out of nowhere. So I was just wondering how that affected numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to pandemic.
That's perfect setup, too. Yeah, so it was launched in 2025. We're going to come up to a 10-year mark. Do we make any good movements?
Well, let's kind of warm up a little bit.
So, and I am all up in the way here. So I'll try to be over here. That is such a fabulous question, something that we have to really tackle at our institution. So what you see here is kind of the general kind of template for Pioneer Insights. It's that data that CSU, East Bay, that EDU, it is public. There is a private side to it to have a lot of our operational stuff, but this is all public for anyone to see. So your great question talked about graduation rates. Let's go. So my team kind of pulls together. We work with Tableau to try to make some really easy visualizations to help us understand and answer these questions. So here we are with our graduation rate. So the key thing to know kind of off the bat, we look at it for across students coming directly from high school as well as transfer students. So each of these groups have their own measures. So for example, we look at if you're coming directly from high school, 4-year rate. Are you finishing in 4? Are you finishing in 6? This is our 6-year graduation rate. You can see where we have been since 2011 and where we are now. The black line shows you our graduation rate. So this pretty much tells you that less than half students who start with us as freshmen graduate. And that's where we've been. So we're seeing these rates kind of come and go. And this, I think, is not right. Unless this year's rates have already been pushed. So this rate is for this last spring. I don't think summer degrees are added in here yet. So 37% is low, but let's wait for the summer degrees to all process before it goes up there. So if you look at just these rates right here, we have a lot of work to do. Our goal is 62%, according to GI 2025. So this gap. The line in red is the proportion of students who apply to graduate. So students who thought they were ready to graduate, you pay the fee, but they weren't. So this gap are students who got denied. So that's kind of where we all are with that. With our 4-year rates, for example, we see something a little bit better. So again, this is kind of the preliminary data, so let's not look at this one just yet. We see that back in 2013, only 13% of our freshman students graduated within 4 years. It's a really small number for us. And our goal is 35%. We've gotten better. All the bumps that we see around the second column is related to campus conversion. When the whole campus rallied around the thought that if we could finish a student without having to go through semester conversion, we would. So we saw actually bumps go up. We kind of went back down, and this last year we kind of went back up. We're at 18%. So that's kind of where we are with freshman rate. Any questions about that? Insights on your part, Nolan?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you're able to see as well, like, different groups, like, if there's a certain amount of, like, different, like, ethnicity, like...
Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and jump to that question, and I'll go back to the transfer rate. The third tab up here talks about equity gaps. So we're going to ask freshmen, let me go back to 6-year rates to keep it kind of consistent with how we've been going. So 6-year rates, we look at rates alone. How are our black students doing? Our black peers, 36% of graduating, that's... 1/3. So remember from the overall, it was about 45-49%. We're seeing a kind of a consistent 30% range. An increase from 23% about 5 years ago, but still a third of our students are graduating. For Latinx students, we're seeing that range as well. I wonder if the drop is for our recent ones. About 44% in the last full year that we counted. That's still a little bit below. Right, where we are as a whole institution. The ones in blue are the ones that are graduating at higher rates. So let's see, white students, Southeast Asian, and South Asian students graduating at higher rates. The next one below looks at rates and low-income status. So we're looking at black low-income students. Interestingly enough, went up a little bit, right? So we're at 37% versus 41%, so it's a little bit down. So we see that there is a pattern when we look at students who are black and low-income. Black and Latinx, 43% versus 44%. So maybe not as big of an effect based off low income. We'll see it for the rest. We look at first generation students as well. And we look at this category down below that looks at the race of students who are first-generation and low-income. And how are they doing? So we see, for example, 33% of black students who are all three, so they're black, they're low-income, and they're first-gen, are graduating at even lower rates. Small percentage points. But we know that there's compounding kind of challenges, right? Students who are low-income may need to work more. Students who are first-generation college students may not have someone to talk to about their academic trajectory, what major to choose, should I take this class or that class? So they're really relying more on their peers to do so. So we do know those pieces. So a ton of data here that you can explore for each of these groups. So we have freshman 6 year, freshman 4 year, we have transfer rates as well. So we look at, so CACC is transfer students from another California community college versus all other transfer students. So students can transfer from four-year school to four-year school. But really looking, if we look at just those who come from a California community college, how are they doing? So again, it's not a good column, but we're about 75% pretty consistently for the last 4 years. Not good, not bad. We're pretty consistent. That means that 3 out of 4 transfer students finish within 4 years. It's pretty good. We want to thrive and try to hit our 83% goal. Four points. Our 2 year rates are jumping up as well. Somewhere between 37% and 45% is kind of where we've been in the last 5 years. Our goal is 49%. So we're actually really close to this goal to have almost half of our students finish in 2 years. We're close. Gas drive a little bit more, just tighten up a little bit. See how we can help the students finish. Kind of the broad overview of where GI 2025 stands, where we haven't hit our goal yet for all of them, but we also have equity measures, right? And where do we fit with that? So you saw the equity gap page, I can highlight it, but down below on this page as well, you'll see these markers highlighted. What's super exciting to see is that with 2 year transfer rates from last year, or actually 2 years ago now, we have zero equity gap. That means black, Latinx, Native American students graduated at the same rates as their peers. Super awesome. And I wish, I'm going to try to promote that a little bit more, but I can say that our estimated gap for this most current graduating year, this last, it went to like 4% gap. So it's still small, but we missed that opportunity to celebrate our zero gap a little bit. So this cohort, for whatever reason, students just, everyone just graduated in really great, equal rates. I'm really happy about that. Yeah. Of course.
Okay. And remember a couple years ago when I was at one of your presentations, something that was really helpful for me to remember, and I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about this with this group, is looking at the gaps and the percentages is really sometimes kind of very broad and hard. I think one of the things that you talked about is closing the gap. If we were able to focus in on 100 students, or I think it was like 96 students, and whatever those support measures could be, that would really flip that story.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about some of those pieces of how we're working with GI 2025?
Yes. So one of the pictures and one of the framing pieces that we did a couple years ago, and we try to just make this feel less daunting, is take a look at our freshman class, for example, of less than 1,000 students this year, the last 2 years, actually. And so each student is one percentage point. Right, so we want to shift it up 10 percentage points. That's really identifying 100 CRM students, so 100 black, Latinx, and Native American students to make sure that they're retained at this institution. That's kind of one way to do it, but we can certainly take a look at each of these cohorts, looking at who started with us at a particular time, how many students are still here, and to close that gap, how many more black, Latino, and Native American students do we need? Just kind of framing it and grounding it a little bit. But for a class of 1,000, you know, it really is kind of an easier measure. 10%, 100 students. Can we encourage and connect 100 students who may be black, Latino, Native American, low income, first gen? How do we connect them to services and support to make sure that they continue on? So I'm going to go jump to Nola's question really quick. He said, oh, who's in the majors? So we have a dashboard here called Program Enrollment. Each program is on here. Last 5 years, all of their enrollment. So I'm picking up bio off alphabetically. I think we're just defaulting. First, as a College of Science, we see how their enrollment has been in the last 5 years. Just kind of a quick heads up, we're going through a decline in our institution. The last 2 years, the number of students who have enrolled is dropping. We're about, overall, for our entire institution, somewhere between 15-20% down. We won't have census until next week, but that's a big number to be down. And you'll see it kind of reflected in each of these program numbers, right, as a client. But say you're curious about race in each of these programs. Bio has 39% Latinx today, last fall, 27% Asian, 8% Black. So all of this information is here if you're interested in a particular program. There are other things that you can take a look at as well besides race. So we have for undergraduate and graduate here. We have it by low income, if you're interested in that. So in this small little box right here, there's a bunch of different demographic variables that we put together so that you can take a look yourself. So first generation, there are 65% first generation college students in biology. Awesome. What kind of supports might they need? How might we think about that difference? So we kind of have all of this here just for your picking. And take a look at it and see what your priorities are, where you're trying to put some focus. If you do it by college, if you do it by program. But really quickly as well, if you want to kind of think about the whole institution, let's take a look at where we stand overall. So let's look at where our students are coming from. We know that 56%, more than half of our students come from our two local counties. Never mind our spending for local service areas, just two. We know that they're from Alameda and Contra Costa. That's pretty big, so we think about services. Kind of a double whammy, you can't win here. Students who are close, maybe really connected with the families and have additional responsibilities. So that might not actually help with programming. But what if we start to shift? I know Martina and I talked about family events. Would that be a really cool avenue, knowing that the families are local? Things to think about. Let's see, what else can I tell you? This kind of tells you just a bunch of different things. How many are undergraduates? How many students are getting their second bachelor's? Because we have that too, most notably in our nursing program. Students finish their BA, and then they want to come back and get their nursing BA. We'll come back and do that. Post-bac is just different. It's not a degree program, but it's just in other certificate things that they're enrolled in. We separated out teacher credential program, students who are getting their master's, and then, of course, our doctorate. We have all this information, and you can drill down to see who's in each of these programs and what you might be interested in. Yes?
Is there any way to link this? This is really great. Onto the actual page of the GSA25 on Space Site, because I know you have your own site along with CPSA, but if you search up GSA25, and it doesn't like connect to that. But I think a lot of people would love to see this.
Okay. Let me connect back, because I think every division has their own GA2025.
Oh,
yeah. So if it's in the academic affairs one, I can certainly link up with that person, but that's a really great suggestion. We probably have to do a lot more linking up and connecting on all of our web pages. So any suggestions? Yeah, keep them coming. I think that's a great idea. I don't know how much time I have, and I know I can talk forever, so let me pull up really quick. I reviewed the priorities that were sent to me about what you're aiming to do this year. So I just went ahead and took a look and pulled some data points together just to frame the conversation as well as the Pioneer insights that we have, but just to also generate conversation. Feel free to cut me off if you guys have a million things to talk about, which is totally fine. Let's see. This always gets really wonky and slow. Freak out whenever in all of these screens. Okay. Let me do this and I will put this in presentation mode. Okay, here we go. So I saw that there was a transfer student interest in your priorities of your agenda. So I just wanted to kind of put out there that they are our largest incoming student population. So our campus overall is about 60-40, give or take a couple years, but talk about the average. That's really different from any other college. In more of the traditional four-year sense, they usually get a lot more students coming in from high school or transfer-heavy campus, and that's really awesome. Give or take, over time, maybe not this year because we are in a decline, we can be as high as 2,200 new transfer students every year. That's super awesome. That's an amazing pipeline. Our estimate for this fall is about 1,500. Like I said, we're in a decline here. We really hope it stops soon, but we'll see. We know the community colleges have been down for the last 3 or 4 years. So if they're down, the number of students we can transfer are going to be down as well. So we've seen this. There was a question about first-year retention, so I just want to let people know that 87 to 88% of transfer students can come back the second year. It's a pretty high retention rate. If you want to think of strategic initiatives to make that even higher, go for it. But it's a pretty high rate as well. Our frost student population, thinking about retention, students who come back the second year, we know that our freshman students, our frost students, don't have quite a high retention rate. So our high has been about 80% of students who come back, and 20% who do not. This next year, we're estimating it to be 75%, so it'll be a decline of 5%. And you can see who our students are. So most notably in our frost population, half the students are Latin American. That's really unique as well. That's different from all the other students who are coming into our institution. Half of our students who come are within these communities, and that's pretty amazing. Thinking about who doesn't stay, though, 34%, that's a third, are Black students. A quarter are Latinx students. A quarter are low income. We have a pretty high number for males, and that seems to be pretty common in a lot of literature and scholarships, not great. And students who do stop out, particularly males, don't actually come back. Whereas for females, if they stop out, they tend to come back to finish their degree a little quicker. And we also know that our peers from Southern California have a higher attrition rate. So there could be a number of factors just being far away from home. There's also a question about graduate student pipeline. So we didn't have the data ready, so we had my team kind of take a look at it. So it's not the cutest visual, but this is what we could pull up. So looking at the last few academic years, and we're looking at students who continued on from an undergraduate to a graduate program. So looking at that, we've been kind of ranging from 78 to 96 students who go straight from undergrad into one of our graduate programs. That's actually higher than I thought, and this is immediately, so within a year. That's about 3.5 to 4% of our student population. And this column, the third column, is anyone who graduated previously and came back at a later point in time for one of our graduate programs. And this number really increased a lot. So we're seeing, what's a double? They needed some time for them to come back for a graduate degree. And that represents about 7 to 9, almost 10% of our graduate students. So thinking about the pipeline, I know that was one of the priorities and questions I had to remember. Concrete location is a hot topic among many different circles. It's underutilized. I don't have to say that any more nicely. It's a beautiful campus. If you have been out there, check it out. But we don't see a whole lot of classes. Less than 1% of our students take up. And this chart that tells you all the possible combinations where students are taking classes. And this was interesting to us. This is a snapshot during the pandemic, of course, and so you'll see a lot more sway towards the online space. But for us to take a look at Hayward Online, 39% balance out on-person class, an in-person class, and one online. And I think the wild one is students do all three, so they're at Hayward, Concord, and online. There's only 10 students, but it's kind of wild. Like, how do you balance all that? We have a handful in the Oakland campus. The Oakland campus is actually really slow as well. Right now they only have graduate, one or two graduate programs, and it's their MBA program. So how do we think about that? Concord and online was about 105 students. So Concord only was 29 students. Concord and online is 105. So you're thinking about programming on the college on that campus. Something to think about, and we'll get this updated for fall 22 in about a month. I know people are moving towards all in-person stuff now. Stop me anytime. Oh, it's the end. So you can totally stop me now.
And you have, I know it's sometimes harder to capture data than the why students come out.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the data that you all have been able to collect so far, are there things that are rising to kind of the cloud surface? Or when you look at attrition from freshman to sophomore, sophomore to junior versus transfer students, in that 87%, I think that's 12%, are you seeing any differences in terms of the populations and the why?
That is a great question. I'm going to call on our team to help. So we do data connection projects that are as a part of our engagement on our campus. So our team helped to lead a team of faculty and staff two years ago, looking at that. So at that time point, we had a survey for students who stopped enrollment. And we're like, hey, what's going on? We just want to check in. We notice you're not here.
Definitely. We struggled with it. The thing that everybody expected, financial growth to the top, right? That's always a big challenge for our students. But some of the things that rose to the top that we were not necessarily anticipating was classes not being offered during the time that they needed it. and also the idea that they were not getting the support that they needed from specific offices. Those were two things that kind of popped up that we said, okay, we can actually address these things. Financial, we may not be able to hit as much, and so we push that forward to those areas that kind of work in that. I would also say that Fanny and I co-chair our GI 2025, back to what Jillian asked before. We have a committee on campus that focuses specifically on GI 2025, and one of the things we're focusing on this year is we have over 5,000, is that what it is? Or no, 4,000 seniors, students that are in senior status, so they have enough hours to graduate, but they're not necessarily finishing, and we're trying to figure out what's preventing them from doing that. Part of it may be the same thing, classes not being offered in the time that they need, or sometimes some classes are only offered in the spring or in the fall, and they're off, you know, that timeline or whatever, but that's something, that's why Jill and I have been trying to recruit you as a student voice for that committee. I'm not going to give up until I get to those meetings, but I think we definitely have had great voices in the past from this group. So if it's not Jillian, one of the people there, I'm sure.
Yeah. I think one of the shocking things is when I took a quick look at it about 2 weeks ago, there was over 400 senior students with at least 119 or 120 credits already who are no longer enrolled. Like, oh, you're so close to what happened, right? I'm just saying, but they have the right unit, it may not be in the right major. Like, I don't know that. I need an advisor to pair up with me to tell me how it's aligned. We look at the bar. We can begin to kind of troubleshoot and see what happened, but how do we help these students finish? Because it's so close. So close. Yeah.
And the one piece of it, and I don't know if you all remember the stat, I just remember one of the other presentations, that it was a really high percentage of students that stopped out when they were asked the question, before you dropped or left, did you have this conversation with the faculty or staff member? I'm not saying that that's an end-all be-all, but for me, like, that's an example of, if the student would have done that, maybe there could have been a help and resolve that they just didn't explore. And do you know what? That was a really high percentage, right?
I guess I'm most into those topics.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. And the why is that? I mean, are we not reaching out in a way that, you know, connects with the students? Are they not aware that these services are available? There's so many different things. And so you'll see, oftentimes you'll be in conversations in other groups where they talk about mandatory advising, and this is why we're trying to say we can at least get the student to connect one time to the advisor. And I think, Kenny, you have a study on that one touch point.
Yes.
They're a lot more successful than the ones that have zero touch points with any advisor on this thing. So it's not about us saying you don't know what you're doing, you need to see an advisor. It's let us help you to make sure that you're progressing in the way that you need to. Or as quickly as you want to get to your degree.
Especially with one of those, you don't know what you don't have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you've got to connect with somebody to help you see, like, oh, I didn't even think about that.
Right.
Hello, I'm a visitor, so sorry for interrupting, but I was really impressed by this presentation. So as a faculty member, I'm wondering about the finances. And if you anticipate that the new federal government loan forgiveness program will benefit our students and increase the retention.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to consider the latest thing I read is that it's not for our students. They just have a debt at a junior
year of life. Correct. Yeah. But could this be the students who have left and might not come back? You know.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, then I have to figure out how to implement this. But
yeah,
of
course.
Yes. That's really hard. You bring up a really good point. Anyone who has a financial pack due needs to figure that out and their holdout before they can even enroll. And that's something for us to really think about. What are the type of holds that we have on this campus that prevent students from enrolling? And you all probably know that a lot better than I do, right? The type of holds. So that will be a barrier for all re-enrolled students.
What I will say to you, I think, is that even though that loan forgiveness is probably going to have a positive impact, we still live in one of the highest cost of living areas. So, you know, forgiving $10,000 in loans is great, and I'm not saying that it's not much when you consider the Bay Area and the cost of living. So, I'm curious to see how that's going to impact.
When Kathy first started, she had me look at what does low income mean within the Bay Area? And I think within our two local counties, it was like 100,000.
Yeah.
Which for all low income. I took that number off of the Housing Authority. They have all of these contextualized kind of income markers available for us to think about. But just know that the federal financial aid uses federal markers, and that for low income is actually really, really low. In the 40s, I think. So financial aid would be better to answer that. Any other questions? Cut me off again if I'm
for any of them.
Any other questions or discussions for Kenny?
There's a lot more data out there. I just want to encourage everyone to, we have a ton of data. We don't necessarily need to collect it, but we do need to kind of organize it better. So if any questions come up in conversations and you're planning, just send me an email and we can talk about it and try to organize it so that you can use it and leverage it without having to go through all of that collection process. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. I didn't talk about our faculty and staff diversity data, which we have on Pioneer Insights as well. You'll see that our faculty is still about 69% white, for example, right? And we know that our student population is so much more diverse than that. Just the start of the conversation. Please just email me, let me know if there's any other additional ones. Happy to come back and put something together and send it up so that you can just review it in your meetings, or you can have me back as well.
Thank you.
Oh, my clock is wrong. I totally thought I was like, wow, I've been talking for 40 minutes. No.
Thank you. Okay, next we're going to move on to information item B, Project Rebound. Project Rebound will be informing the Board of Directors about the Project Rebound program on campus. And we'll, I'll just pass it over to Eileen, and I have your slides ready.
Great, thank you.
Just let me know when to switch to this.
I'll go through really quickly. So I hope this project is part of the solutions to some of the problems that Fanny was talking about. So Project Rebound is new this year on our campus. And we are a program that is designed to support the higher education of formerly incarcerated people. So that means anybody who spent time in juvenile hall, prison, or any other facility. We are here to support you. And so it started, one thing I like about this slide is not the pictures of us, but the fact that it was a student who brought us together. So I've been working with Julene Lamb, who's a professor in public health, and we met because we were both teaching courses at St. Quentin.
I was teaching writing. I'm an English professor, and she was teaching math. So that's how we got together and decided we wanted to work on a program at Cal State East Bay. So without students, this would not have happened. And we also had help from Julie Beck, who's a professor in sociology, and this is her area of expertise, working with formerly incarcerated people. Maylin Wu, because she's in, she's our statewide senator, so our academic senate, has helped us with this. And she was very good with budget, because you've got to get a budget. So thank you, Maylin Wu. And then also Interim Provost Greer, because she had started a project Rebound at Stanislaus. So she knew all about it, and she was very supportive. And most importantly, next slide. Thank you, ASI. And Araceli was a great help in this, in passing a resolution that supported this project last year. So I really appreciate your support. So, next slide. It's a nationally recognized program. Believe it or not, it's been in San Francisco State since 1967, so it's more than 55 years. And we felt it's about time to get it here. So it's a system-wide, now it's a system-wide consortium. For many years, it was just at San Francisco State. So it was increased, next slide, in, I have to say something about this, sorry. It was founded by a professor of sociology who himself had been formerly incarcerated. And those are all the books he produced. So he was incarcerated in the 1950s in Soledad State Prison. And then when he was in there, he said, I gotta get an education. And he got out and went to UCLA, and then he went to Berkeley and did his doctorate in sociology. Then he got a tenure-track job in sociology at San Francisco State. And that's when he started the program, because he was committed to a program that had people who were incarcerated running it and helping one another, people who have been formerly incarcerated. And that principle is one that has been very important to the success of the programs like this all around the country. But San Francisco State was the original model. So thank you, Dr. Irwin. So in 2014, 9 campuses started programs. In 2020, it expanded to 14. We are number 15 to have a Project Rebound. So those are the campuses. Next slide. The daily adult population is still hovering around 100,000. And when I think about that, I think about, there are 500,000 students in the CSU. That's 20% of that population. And we know they're Black and Latinx men under the age of 40. Although there are some, when I taught my class, I had students who were in their 20s and students who were in their 60s. So there's a whole range at San Quentin. But these students are the best students, and they return eager and ready to get an education. Next slide. Thank you. There are programs. The Santa Rita Jail has Open Gate programs, so we're working very closely with them. And at Open Gate, they do pre-collegiate courses, so they help students apply. They apply for community college or college, and they give them preparation for what kind of academic learning you're going to be doing in college, so to prepare them. They also have GED programs, but Open Gate is where they do get you ready for college. And the good news is we have a new sheriff in town in Alameda County who is much better, and the people who are doing Open Gate are now in the prison, and they're recruited in the jail and recruiting students regularly and working back after being locked out during COVID. And then also, the program I taught in was called the Prison University Program. It's now an accredited program called Mount Tamalpais College. So you can get a 2-year AA degree in San Quentin. And when those students get out, they're ready to come in as transfer students to Cal State East Bay. Next slide. There are also great programs right down the street from us at Chabot, RISE. Restorative Integrated Self-Education is a program for formerly incarcerated as well as systems impacted students. And those are the students who have family members who were in prison. And so it's addressing the needs of people who were impacted by the system, not just students who were in the system. But we're working closely with them, and they have lots of students who are coming up from one program into our, we're hoping, into our Project Rebound program. But this is where we're going to need your help. Next slide. Thank you. So ROC is restoring our communities at Laney College. Same thing. What's happening now is there really is a pathway. So people who are coming out of Santa Rita Jail can go to directly into Laney, and they can go directly into Chabot, and then they can come up to Cal State East Bay. And they're serving, like, I don't know if I said this, but Open Gate at the height, right before COVID, they were sending 90 students to the community colleges. So that's pretty good. And now the state has given money to Rising Scholars Network, which is a community a funding for community college programs to improve the existing programs they have and create additional programs. As of now, there are about 62 community college campuses with programs. Next slide. And, you know, fun or sad fact, every prison institution is within 15 miles of the community college. So there is a pathway. Just get people, and the goal is to get people out of prison and jail and give them alternatives. So here are the key elements: leadership with incarcerated experience. Right now we're working to hire a program coordinator for Project Rebound. So we're looking for somebody who's got this incarceration experience. Build communities among formerly incarcerated students. We have a physical location. We're over in Robinson Hall, 240, 242, and 244. And the idea is to have peer support networks and funds too. So we've got money. 25% of our budget goes to directly supporting the students in whatever way they need. Vouchers for books, transportation, school supplies, meals, money for application and test fees. And these are, you know, this is kind of the blueprint from the system. This is what the goals are for Project Rebound. I've heard from a lot of the community colleges or even from Open Gate, when people get out, they're kind of put into physical jobs like welding or contracting or something like that, and not encouraged to be academics. So these kind of programs are helping those who have an interest in becoming academically and intellectually engaged. And then another one. So this is what we're doing right now. We just started. So I'm here so that you all can help us spread the word. Our goal is to recruit the students who are currently on campus right now, and then also work to recruit students from the community colleges and other institutions. And that's it. I'll be sending you this flyer. Did I send it already or something?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got an electronic version of this. And then we have to, I've got to make a correction because I want to make sure it says, if you've been, not just if you've been incarcerated, but if you've been in juvenile hall as well, not just jail or prison. And we have we're working on a website. So if you're interested in this project, please let me know and please spread the word to other students. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you. Any questions about this program? Yeah, Nolan?
Yeah, hi. I'm just wondering, like, I know that some people
they consider like their incarceration status as like an insecurity. So I'm just wondering how you would deal with those people who prefer their incarceration status to be confidential.
Yeah. So the confidentiality is a key issue. Like we need to keep track of the students. So the students who join have to be willing to let us follow them through admissions, and there's going to be a little code, because in order to get the funding, we have to prove that the program is successful. But we are really committed to making the students feel it is their time and place where they decide to come out. So that's, other than coming to Project Rebound, any kind of, if they want to be involved in our publicity, say, have a picture on the website, that's their choice. That's not a requirement. So that's a goal, to make sure people feel that they have control over when and where they want to come out. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense.
Yeah. That's a great question, though.
Any other questions or discussions?
Or even suggestions about how I could spread the word.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And then next we have discussion item C, Fight Procrastination Event. The Board of Directors will be discussing the Fight Procrastination Event. And I'll just pass this on to Nolan and Alea. You can stand up or do it from your seat. I'll just sit here.
So, hi everyone. I'm Nolan Kalara. I'm the Director of Programming for ASI. And I wanted to propose this event to you guys for my first programming event. So as you can see from the board, this is my Fight Procrastination event. And it will be on Tuesday, September 27th, 2022, from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. And the purpose is to motivate students to be more prepared with their classwork and not resort to procrastination when dealing with upcoming due dates. So as you guys know, a common thing that college students, including myself, do sometimes is procrastinate on our due dates. And I feel like this event, it's really important to address and also to give students advice. And as you can see, this is early throughout the semester. So this is perfect, a great way to help students not deal with procrastination-related issues in the end of the semester, but rather tackle it from the beginning of the semester. And my direct contact is, of course, me, Director of Programming, Director of Wellness, Alea, and also we're working closely with Kate, Sam, the librarian. We're actually planning to have this event in the core building, in first floor. I believe it's the biggest room in the core, and Alea will be talking about the budget.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Alea. I'm the Director of Wellness. So we wanted to get food that would enhance concentration. So what we had in mind was granola bars, yogurt, pineapple juice, and then we would encourage students to fill up their water bottles at the water stations on campus. So for granola bars, it would be about $41.79. For yogurt, it would be $23.16. And then for the pineapple juice, $31.04, with a grand total of $95.99.
And does anyone have any additional comments, questions, or concerns?
I really like this event. I like the day of it. I have two things. The first one, I like that you said encourage students to fill up their water bottles rather than buy water bottles. The second, is there a reason for it to be at, is this 1:30 to 3:30?
Yes, we decided to put it during that event. One, because it's during our office hours as well, and a lot of other board members' office hours, so it would be perfect if the officers during their office hours are able to come and support us. And two, because that's also a typical time when students are on campus, like waiting for their next class. So they could, this is a perfect opportunity for them to come to the core building, stop by, maybe take a look at some advice, and feel free to get some snacks. And in addition, this is the entrance of the core building. A lot of the students' entrances come through there, and this is great for them to be on their way to their classes, basically just to stop by. Is there any additional questions? Yes, Tyler?
Yeah, so I just want to understand correctly, sorry. So the students come in and they have like an area to study with like snacks.
Yes.
Okay. So, I think a suggestion is the SCA is like on the third floor. I'm pretty sure. I don't know where this one's at. Where's the meeting at?
Yeah, it's the first floor of the core, and the SCA lives in the third floor.
Maybe you can have like a printed directions of like the resources in the core, because honestly, I don't even know where most of them are at yet. Maybe you can hand those out for students in case they need to study or something.
Awesome. Thank you for the suggestion.
Sure. Going off of that, I don't know if you know John from the club, but he has a lot of resources. You can ask him, and he also has a map. That's like helpful to also pass out or like advertise with this so people know where to go.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll keep that in mind. As you know, as you can see there, we're working closely with Kate, but we can also talk with John about that and maybe invite other librarians to stop by as well. Any other questions or suggestions?
I know, well, Ashby had already asked, but would it be possible to do during U hour, have it start in U hour, 12:15?
12:15. That's something, is it okay if I could debrief with my co about that and then come back to you during the next COD meeting?
Yeah, just to add on to what Christina said, I also think that doing the hour would be better because during that time, most of the students are out of class and just going around the campus, so I feel like that would be like more engagement for the students.
Yeah, I'll definitely take that into consideration. If anything, we might just extend the hours then. You hour, I believe it's also on Tuesday, right? Yeah, if anything, we can just put the hours earlier or just extend the hours back to 12:15.
Yeah, no, I love the idea I love the entire idea. I love the idea of incorporating a new hour, but if you do, I would recommend that y'all think about getting more stuff because that's just going to increase your audience. I'm not trying to make y'all go broke or anything, but yeah, $100, I think it's going to be. Maybe just double that at least,
mm-hmm.
I think that might be a good idea to go.
Yeah, by more stuff, you mean buy more food?
Yes, especially like the granola, because then you can, if you don't give it out, you can use it in another program. You know, it won't go bad. Go-Gurt, maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with
it. Awesome. Thank you for the suggestion. Yes, Tyler?
Going back to the SCA, last year they donated some stuff, which is pretty cool. The students were a fan of the heart stress balls, or I don't even know what they were, the squishy balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were huge fans. I don't know, maybe you can have them donate some stuff and ask. Save you some money. I don't know.
It says that you're going to have a guest speaker. Do you know who the guest speaker is and like how long? Like for approximately like what they'd be speaking for? Would it be like 20 minutes or like is it like a set duration? Like just because I know like at least for me, like.
Yeah.
I'd probably get bored easily, just because I get bored easily.
We're actually, that is to be determined, actually. If anything, we might just take out the guest speaker. If anything, we're just going to replace it with, like, a flyer of, like, information about how to fight procrastination and stuff. But, yeah, thank you for noticing that. We'll definitely talk about that in our event planning process.
Then I was just going to say one thing. Maybe you could reach out to, like, student health and counseling. I feel like they always have, like, resources, like, that are aimed towards that. And how, like, maybe not to, like, get stressed out while, you know, cause at least for me, like, when I'm procrastinating, I, like, stress out because I'm procrastinating. So maybe something along those lines.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me know about that.
sorry, last thing, sorry. I want to add on to what Deli just said. Like, Janice also from The Raw always has really good self-care tips. And then I recommend listening to what Martine said about ordering more snacks, because last year Tyler had a similar event. And I never joked about ordering more because Martine recommended it, but it actually came in handy because students really come out for these types of things. So I would stock up on food because it really invites more students.
Thank you for letting me know. I'm missing any other questions or suggestions.
I think overall this is a great first event. So
thank you.
I'm looking forward to it. Okay, so next we have discussion item D, resolution and removal of Respondus webcam proctoring. The Board of Directors will be discussing the resolution and removal of Respondus webcam proctoring, and I'll pass this on to Arzeli.
Yeah, so this is Arzeli. I was working with Ashley and Michelle on this resolution because recently there was a case, it's mentioned in here, Ogletree v. Cleveland State University, that basically in the case, a federal judge ruled that if a student is taking a webcam test, they can't require you to do a room scan because it violates our Fourth Amendment rights. And then, so essentially what we're aiming to do with this resolution is get rid of room scanning, but as well getting rid of the webcam feature overall in, like, the proctoring software, Respondus, just because I know at least, like, for me and, like, several other students, it's mentioned in the resolution, when you have, like, webcam on, like, it makes you, like, more anxious, and, like, test anxiety is already, like, a thing, and that can just make students even more overwhelmed. But also, I know, like, you mentioned in the resolution, like, we also wouldn't want to force, like, students to come to campus, like, we would just want they're just to be in a webcam or anything, but, like, also not require them to have to do testing on campus. So, yeah, we were really just looking for, like, feedback and, like, who else we should reach out to and, like, what else we should do to expand upon our resolution. But, yeah.
Awesome. I just wanted to ask if you had anything in consideration for us, like, cheating and, like, yeah, basically just making sure that students are taking their exams faithfully.
I didn't really think too much on that, but I think with the Respondus software, without having the camera on, you can't, like, open another tab. So, I mean, it would be, I guess, someone in theory could, like, pull up their phone, but, I mean, I would have faith in students that they're responsible enough and they're being ethical. I think that just comes with the trusting of students and to make ethical decisions, because at the end of the day, if someone does cheat, like, the only person that they're cheating is themselves by not knowing that knowledge.
We'll go Ashley and then Marcy.
I like this resolution. I also think I've noticed, like, a lot of professors now will, like, survey the class in the beginning of the semester and, like, oh, do you guys want to do it or not? But I've noticed an alternative some professors do is do, like, a Zoom class instead. So you have, like, your Zoom open on one side of your test, and then they're kind of watching you, but I mean, you could still cheat, like, you can find a way to cheat even with the webcam, like, there's always ways to cheat, but I think, like, the Zoom camera is, like, a less scary version of the webcam, because the webcam sometimes, like, someone will open a door, and it'll just, like, alert the professor that you're cheating, and it's just a whole process, so I like this resolution.
Yeah, Sally, I agree, I like the resolution, I think we've had discussions about this in the past. My suggestion is just to reach out to, like, Pamela Baird and Accessibility Services, just to get their take on it, and then I know Sarah's not here right now, but getting somebody from the Academic Senate to also be part of this, I think would be really good because it impacts faculty, and it kind of gives you that leg in with them, just in case you get any sort of feedback from the Academic Senate. But I love the resolution, the idea behind it.
Sorry, I was writing notes. Yeah, I think that's something that me, Ashley, and Michelle will look into then to make this stronger. Because I hope, like, this impacts. Yeah, like, I really want this. Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or discussions for this item? And also, the chair wishes to recognize James Chair at 12:07 p.m. and Martin Castillo at 12:05 p.m. And next, we're going to move on to discussion item E, ballot bowl raffle. The board of directors will be discussing the ballot bowl raffle. And I'll pass this on to Jillian.
This was something that I was thinking about with the students to register to vote. And I'll be working with Nolan and LA on this. So the main prize baskets are just like the three prize baskets, and then the raffle, the actual raffle drawing will be from October 17th to the 21st. That's just 15 days before the last day to vote. And I just wanted to address an issue that I've been running into with this raffle, and just, that's just being inclusive to all students. Obviously, there's going to be a good population of students that are not eligible to vote. So if you guys could have any suggestions on how we could publicize this event without being we're not being inclusive to all students, I would love to hear them, or even just email me or message me. But as far as the budget is going right now, I think it's $300 per basket, but I think that will be less once we start ordering the items.
So the reason why I also wanted to collab with this is because I suggested the idea of having the raffle baskets and potentially doing a raffle for those who do register to for the California voter eligibility, and also I wanted to also communicate and to collaborate with other communities such as the housing community, maybe advertising on that, maybe collaborating with RHA or other programs throughout CSUEB and making sure that students, they are eligible for the California elections.
And most of the publicity will be probably from our Instagram and online, but we will also be planning on tabling once this is finalized. So I'll be every other week or every week with anyone.
And then we'll do Tyler Miller.
So for students that are not eligible to vote yet, you can utilize the spinning wheel in the, I don't know where it's at, in the office somewhere. So a Q&A type thing, if they know the information on voting or the, I don't know, committee stuff, just stuff in general, you can give them a giveaway for anything.
Question for beyond the raffle, is there any educational workshops or anything prior to this? And I'm asking because I know some students are not civically engaged because they don't know what is involved for them or what they should be looking for or just knowledge in general. So I'm curious if there's anything shared with the raffle
piece. I would need to look into it. I would have to find something that could be a good speaker for that. I just haven't been in contact with a partner
I think in the past I've kind of thought that would be really easy for us, and I've been working with others and have tried to be part of the work to be able to just talk through the single goal of dialogue. And so students rally more to, now I can use my voice. So that was really something not only do with the new emergency and engaging in housing, I think as well as there's another group of partners coming in for various different student groups across the board to be able to show how their voices can show.
To go off of your question about the workshops, I know that the Freshman Foundation of Success classes, so peer academic coaches are in there. I'm working with the PAC team, I am a PAC. So in the GS classes, I know that one of my faculty actually had a whole thing on voting, a mini workshop in a way. I don't know if you can maybe get in touch with all the GS faculty about maybe doing a little breakdown of voting and just simple information. I don't even know if I can give the word out. I don't know if I have the power to do that, to be honest. But that's just a, I don't even know all the faculty. But maybe getting in touch with all the faculty to give a little mini course. I don't know. That might help out for freshmen.
You can mention it to Cindy.
Oh, yeah. I'll talk to Cindy. Yeah, I can talk to her today.
Yeah, Arizona?
I think, when you're, like, encouraging, you're, like, I know y'all are going to be sibling, maybe, like, you can give some type of, like, letter or, like, handout, like, that can give them, like, some facts about, like, voting and, like, how powerful it is, and then, like, you know, that there's no right or wrong answer, like, when they vote, so they don't feel like that they're making a bad decision, because, like, there's, you know, there's no bad decision to vote.
Any other questions or discussion? And then, like Jillian said, if you have any suggestions that come up, contact us. Perfect. And then next, we're just going to move on to special reports, and we have one from ASI Director of Legislative Affairs, Jillian Lamapis.
But I just wanted to update everyone on the ballot poll. So I touched on that already in the previous discussion item, but also just wanted to let you guys know that we received fiscal ballot cards in office. So if anybody asks for a fiscal ballot card, they're going to be available on the front desk. There's been a lot of progress with marketing on our end with the help of Ashley, Hila, and Nolan with RHA, Ashley with our social media, and then also Hila. Like put out all the posters for me, which is really nice. One thing I wanted to point out is that if you're already registered to vote, I know a lot of students already asked me this, but you can still participate in the ballot poll by checking your voter status on the same link. So that still counts. And then lastly, we have progress with some marketing and things for helping contact Lori, which is the State Vice President of Communications and Marketing. Hopefully, we have a meeting with her this afternoon to talk about publications of the advertising on marquees and mass emails, and hopefully getting to the video for us. So that's pretty exciting. So yeah, that's it. Actually, no, one more thing, sorry. Asking our guests to see a smoothie and to stay this weekend. Unfortunately, we weren't able to bring everyone due to budget reasons, but I still want to bring your guys' voices to see a smoothie and see a say. So if you guys did have any ideas or suggestions or anything that you have seen as an issue as a campus that we're having, please let us know. I'm definitely going to have my messages open in my Slack or email during the weekend because I'm working anyway.
So one thing I noticed was that SFSU and SJSU, they actually provide clipper cards for in the ASI or their AS office, but in East Bay, I remember we used to have it, but we don't have it anymore. I just wanted to know if you're able to talk with maybe the other student governments on how they are able to talk with BART. Like, I know that East Bay, maybe because we are a smaller school, maybe we're not able to afford it, but maybe hopefully we can ask them, like, who their contacts are, and we could contact them and negotiate. How could we sell Clipper cards, even though we are a smaller school?
Ashley, I feel like we talked about this before last year. I don't know what the reasoning was. Does anyone recall?
Marcy,
I'm looking at you.
Yeah, we have put this out in front of BART before. Actually, we did a whole referendum, and it got voted down. They'll let you buy them, sell them, and then resell them from the office. They just won't give. I mean, I guess it's kind of succeeding. Yeah, the university mentioned they purchase them wholesale, like from a Walgreens or something, and then they resell them from their office to make it more convenient for the students. But yeah, James would have to do that.
Go ahead. Well, sorry, and I guess going back on the Nolan's idea, I think it's great to really gauge what some of the other associated students are doing for additional student services. Particularly as now is a really good time to evaluate that as we come back more in person, like things that were lost over time, such as the movie tickets and things like that. Like, and maybe that's not really relevant for folks in the same way, but. That is something that we were going to be discussing as a staff to kind of even brainstorm what are some services that we could begin to beef up and actually bring that conversation back to the board. So I think it would be really great to see just from your lens and talking with other folks, like what innovative services or things that could be possibilities here that, again, could either be done with our front desk or in the board of the bank side. So, very timely, good conversation.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like go off of what Jillian said. This isn't for Jillian because we're going together. But I think something that we notice at CSSA a lot is that our campus has a lot of resources that some other campuses don't. The only issue is that students don't know about them. So I brought this up with President Sandine too, that it's unfair that to know about these resources you have to be involved on campus, and I don't think that should be necessary basically for students, right? Like a lot of students are commuter students, they should be able to go to class but still know these resources exist. I've sat in so many meetings over the past week with ACE and CAP and so many, literally, and like they all have so many resources that I wish I had 3 years ago, and I've like Googled them, but we have them in our CSUEB website. So I think that's something that we all need to work on collectively, and maybe brainstorming on like how can we get those resources out, not just through Instagram or Basecamp, because those clearly have not been working, but what is the best way to like get these resources out to freshmen, to transfers, to all students? And I know we have that resources like sheet that we just started recently, and I've shared that with GS professors to put that as like a document at the bottom of their emails, kind of how we'll get the land acknowledgement. So that's like a step that I'm working towards, but I think that we could all kind of figure out how students can know about these without having to know us or without having to know really resources like the unwalled, basically. So that's all.
No.
Yeah, and I think adding on to what everyone has been saying, I think it's really important to tell people more about like the resources that also we provide as well. Like I feel like a lot of the students, when I'm walking around and I tell them that, oh, I'm part of ASI, they're like, what's ASI? I mean, it's not that like it's not that deep, but honestly, at the same time, it's also important for them to know that like if they need like any like I know also another thing that a lot of students realize that they only go to the ASI office to get a Scantron and to or maybe sometimes the ACE game tickets, like in that the ACE event. But it's also really important to let students know that if they need an advocate, like we have academic senators and we have people to advocate for them. And you know, just more transparency of what ASI could provide for students.
So now we're going to move on to round two remarks. Does anyone have any round two remarks? Yeah, Arzali?
I just want to say that there's two open positions on the VP of University Affairs. So if anybody's interested, feel free to apply if you know somebody who has IT experience in ASI before and are interested. That's an opportunity. The Director of Concord position is still open. So if any of y'all know any Concord students who would love to get involved, please recommend them to apply. The application is on Basecamp. And then also, we're all trying to sit our committees if you have a committee. So please try and work on that. I know like you can contact Ashley, like for social media help. You can also contact me if you're like struggling to get people and like how to recruit, because I know that's also hard. And I really want us to try and build these committees. I know last year we didn't really get that opportunity. So, yeah.
Any other round table more? Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to update you all. So I know that this debate has been quite strong and very hard for many of us, whether you're on campus or off campus. We're reporting on behalf of housing. We have sent out a couple of communications for our residents that emphasize work for mission areas. So we have committee rooms, we have a new kitchen, we have an internal study halls within the building that are in areas 2 and 3. And we're also working with water and other things to tell them where to be water. In addition to that, we're going to try to do some pop-up events in the next week that might include, because we're still talking for it right now, but popsicle sticks, some water balloons, some maybe slide things. And so those are some creative ways that we're going to come up with it. But in case you're hearing about it, it's true.
Thank you. Ashita?
This is my last thing, I swear. So the president's office and I have been working on trying to get the cabinet to sit with us and just kind of have a meet and greet, because I know that the last year I didn't really know who was on the cabinet, but this year, because of transparency priority, that's like something that we really want to focus on. So I think they're working on November 9th. That's the date. It should be a Wednesday. Hopefully during lunch hour. But do you guys have any ideas of what you guys want that to look like? Do you want it to be like a sit-down meeting, a lunch, a coffee chat? Any thoughts? You guys don't have to let me know right now. You can let me know about the next week. But maybe in the next week, that would be great if you could have any brainstorms.
Free food as always.
Yeah. pre-patriot. That's a general person.
Okay, any other roundtable remarks? I just have a quick one. If you ever want to talk about anything, like a lot of people have been asking, like, can I bring this up in a board meeting? Can I bring this up in a board meeting? You can bring anything to a board meeting. Just email me, and then we can have a discussion item for it. Don't be shy. Talk about anything. If you want any suggestions on anything, you can bring it to the board meeting as well. And yeah, stay cool, everyone. Okay. So if there's no other roundtable remarks, I adjourn this meeting at 1:17 p.m. I hope you guys have a good rest of your day.